Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Child Anxiety FAQ podcast. FAQ stands for Frequently Asked Questions, and I'll be answering your questions about child and teen anxiety. My name is Dawn Friedman, and I've been working with kids and families for more than 30 years. Now I run Child Anxiety Support, a membership program for parents of anxious kids and teens. Let's get started. This week's question came up after I did a reel on Instagram and TikTok, where I was talking about the research behind child anxiety treatment, and someone said, and I quote, "Is this true with autism and ADHD then too?" And I thought this was a great question. So even though it isn't anxiety specific, there's certainly enough overlap in these diagnoses that I thought it was worth discussing. ADHD and autism are both forms of neurodiversity, meaning that we're talking about kids whose brains work differently than the perceived norm. Anxiety may show up and often does show up as part of a neurodiverse diagnosis. It is super common in both ADHD and autism, but we're not trying to cure ADHD and autism, and although I bristle a bit at the word cure, we are trying to cure anxiety. Okay, let me back up here. There are certain ways of being that make kids more vulnerable to dysfunctional anxiety because, remember, anxiety itself is a tool to keep us safe. Dysfunctional anxiety is when that tool overreacts and limits us or limits our options and experiences. So we don't want to cure all anxiety, and we don't necessarily want to cure children of the things that might make them more vulnerable to anxiety, but we do want to cure the dysfunction. So when I'm talking about the things that make children more vulnerable to getting an anxiety diagnosis, we're talking about highly sensitive kids. We're talking about kids with a little more negative emotionality. Sometimes these kids have a slow to warm temperament. And these are perfectly okay ways to be. It's fine to be a sensitive person. It's fine to be the kind of person who comes to new experiences more slowly. So what we're trying to do is eliminate the dysfunction, not the way of being. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Anyway, all of the research shows that in child anxiety, the parents and/or caregivers unintentionally get stuck in pitfalls that perpetuate the dysfunctional anxiety instead of supporting their child's functioning in the face of anxiety. A super simple example would be a child who is afraid of driving over bridges. This was my daughter when she was 4 or 5. Let's say that the parents of this child start planning their route to avoid driving over bridges. This limits the child's chance to deal with their anxiety about bridges and disrupts the whole family's functioning because now perhaps the family isn't going to places where you'd have to drive over a bridge or taking much longer to get to their destination in an effort to help their child feel safe. The parent is in charge of that. And so it's the parent who needs to understand what they're doing and why it isn't helping and how to stop and deal with the fallout. If they've been avoiding bridges for some time and all of a sudden they start driving over them, chances are they're going to have a really upset kid in the back seat and they're going to need to know what to do about it. The parent needs to take all of the information they're learning about anxiety and take it into other times where they see anxiety negatively impacting their child or their family. Does this make sense? Hopefully it makes sense. Also, the parent needs to know how to support their child's growth in coping with anxiety so that eventually they can pass that job on to their kid. Children need to grow into people who can handle their own exposures, who can plan for them, who can deal with them, who can learn to recognize when they're anxiously avoiding and instead start confronting, because that child is going to be an adult who will need to know how to do all of that. When families do this, when parents get this help, when parents go through a guided program, the research tells us that it is much more effective than asking kids to do it. In fact, there was one study that found that when parents had a 2-hour class and then 6 follow-up check-in phone sessions, that 95% of their children no longer met criteria for an anxiety diagnosis. Compare this to another study that found that working exclusively with kids resulted in about 60% no longer meeting criteria. I'll put the citations for these studies in the show notes, by the way. Now, with ADHD and autism, we're obviously not trying to get to a place where neurodiverse children no longer meet criteria for their neurodiversity, right? But we certainly want to see them improve in functioning. And yes, parental supports and parent-led interventions do have a strong research base, which just makes sense. Parents control children's environments, and so if parents can learn to be more effective and create more welcoming and supportive environments and learn how to advocate for their child in the schools, then all to the good. I do think that the purpose is a bit different because anxiety can be perpetuated by parental behaviors, and I don't think that's true of ADHD or autism, but certainly we can all learn better how to support our kids who need something different than their neurotypical peers. As far as anxiety is part of an ADHD or autism diagnosis, the research does show that addressing parental behaviors works to address the anxiety. However, this should only be attempted if the anxiety is the primary concern at that time. That is to say that if the ADHD or autism diagnosis is offering greater challenges for the family or the child, then they should focus on that first, whether that's learning strategies for the family or addressing issues through other interventions, such as occupational therapy, working with a speech-language pathologist, or getting some ADHD coaching, or finding a social skills group. It makes sense to address the anxiety if the anxiety seems like the most pressing issue. However, if other things are going on, we need to address those first. I think about this when I was working exclusively with kids, and I would see a child come in and realize we needed an OT evaluation before we could dig into anxiety because it was difficult to tell what was anxiety and what was sensory processing. So sometimes we need to figure those things out first. Now, personally, I advise parents to start with one step, whichever step feels easiest or whichever issue feels most pressing for the family. Address that one first. And then when they feel they have a handle on that, whether that's seeing some improvement or feeling like the family is coping fairly well, then take next steps. Sometimes we take the wrong step first and we figure that out by going through that step. Again, the example of the child who would come to my office and we would do an intake and I would start working with the family and say, you know, I think the sensory processing issues are more important to deal with right now, or I think your child would benefit from a social skills group where they could start creating some friendships before we start working on their anxiety, or let's do social skills and anxiety. It's tempting to do everything all at once, and in some cases, like in early intervention, there may be several areas that are part of a coordinated plan, but it's also okay to take things step by step. Otherwise, everyone is going to get overwhelmed. I also wanted to address a comment I got on TikTok where someone said, and again, I quote, "I really think if a child is in therapy, then the parents need to be in therapy too." Let's talk about that a little bit. I don't agree that every time a child is in therapy, the parents ought to be too. I think it can help. I think for parents who are struggling with whatever brought their child to therapy, that can be a help. For example, if a child experienced a traumatic event, that can certainly be traumatic for parents. But sometimes I think it's less about therapy and more about supports or more about finding your village. One of the things we know about anxiety, for example, is that parents do better when they don't feel alone. And so an advantage to groups is that parents get to talk to other parents. When I was focusing more on one-to-one clinical work, that was a big frustration for me to see how lonely it could be for the parents that I was working with and to not have more resources to share to get them connected. It's one of the things that inspired me to create Child Anxiety Support. It allowed me to build it in a platform where people can talk to each other and not just to me. When I tried to do that in real life, it's awfully hard to build momentum to get a parent group working. It seemed like we'd figure out a day and a time, and then soccer season would start, and everyone's schedules would blow up, and the group would be back to square one. Plus, I had to charge a lot more in order to pay for my time, and so it wasn't as affordable to parents as I wanted it to be. Anyway, I don't think everyone needs therapy, but I do think everyone needs something when a child is struggling. I especially don't think parents necessarily need therapy if we're talking about a teenager, because teenagers are growing in separateness from their parents. So what a teenager needs may not be reflective of what the family needs. It can be, but not necessarily. I mean, sometimes it sure makes sense if the family's function is suffering. Sometimes parents need help figuring out how to parent a teenager, and sometimes family therapy instead of individual therapy makes sense. But other times, a child or teen just needs someone else. They just need someone else to talk to. I can think back to several kids I've seen with great parents, and the family was functioning beautifully, and the kids were just struggling a little bit. Part of the parents building the child's resiliency and building their child's toolbox was showing them that there are other adults that they can trust and that they can count on to support them. Those parents valued counseling as a tool, and so they felt comfortable saying to their child, "Hey, here's a person who can be part of our family's toolbox and can be part of your toolbox." Those parents didn't need counseling, but those parents valued counseling and valued creating and promoting a family culture where getting help is accepted and normalized. Now, I do think parents and counselors should always be communicating to some extent, more so when kids are younger, less so when kids are teen, but enough that the therapist has a rough idea of what's going on with the family and the parents feel they can trust the therapist to communicate with them should the need arise. Obviously, the child or teen needs to trust the therapist's confidentiality, and so the therapist always needs to be clear and upfront about when and what they will share with parents. But that, my friends, is a whole different topic. Back to that TikTok quote, which was, again, "I really think if a child is in therapy, then the parents need to be in therapy too." One of the things I do think this speaks to is we have a tendency to blame parents for child's functioning. So if the child is struggling, ergo, the parent has caused struggling. That's not always true. Even when we're talking about anxiety treatment, the parents may be getting stuck, but it doesn't mean the parenting is doing something wrong. It means the parent is doing something that is no longer working and needs to change. The things that parents do for their anxious kids work for non-anxious kids. I say this often because I am really sensitive to the idea of blaming parents. These things make sense for non-anxious kids. They don't work for anxious kids, but it totally makes sense that this is what a parent would try first. As a parent of an anxious child, I have gotten stuck in my child's anxiety. I have had to go back to the drawing board, back up, get out of that parenting pitfall, and find new ways to do it. So I know how this works, but I am not going to blame myself for trying things that don't work, for trying things that don't work and sticking with it until I realize it doesn't work, because good parents learn to be flexible. If you are recognizing that the things you are doing don't work, then you're already doing a good job because you've recognized that. Now, the next step is figuring out what to do instead. that's good parenting too. So you will never get any kind of blame from me when you're talking to me about your anxious child or your child who is struggling in other ways. We get stuck often because we care so much, and so we are overcompensating. We are doing more than is required. We haven't figured how to pull back on supports. Remember that our job as parents is to make ourselves obsolete. Back to those families who would bring their child for counseling, even though the family was doing really well, they are building a toolbox of other people who can support their child because their child is going to be growing in community and as an adult themselves are going to want to know how to create a village. That's what we're trying to do as parents. Thanks for tuning in this week. And if you have a question you'd like me to address on the show, you can reach out to me by going to childanxietysupport.com and submitting a question there. You can also check out the program while you're there. And if you'd like to learn more about whether or not it would be a good fit for your family, feel free to reach out for a quick consult call. Thanks so much, and I'll see you next week.